Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents You Can Change Other People. The four steps to help your colleagues, employees, even family up their game. By Peter Bregman and Howie Jacobson, PhD. Narrated by Peter Bregman. We dedicate this book to the memory of our fathers. Jerry Bregman, 13 December 1931. To 23 April 2020. Joel R. Jacobson, 30 July 1918 to 26 December 1989. Peter, Papa, every page in this book is inspired by the gentle, sweet way you always brought out the best in people. Howie, Dad, you showed me how to be a warrior for positive change and a steadfast champion of the underdog. Forward. As one of the founders of the field of business coaching and an executive coach for more than 40 years, my mission has been simple: to help great leaders get even better through positive, lasting behavioral change. It's been an incredibly rewarding career. I've coached CEOs at organizations like Ford, the World Bank, Best Buy, Target, the Girl Scouts, and many others. I get paid very well. I work with amazing people. I contribute to positive change in the world. But perhaps my biggest thrill is when I help someone against the odds. Someone whose colleagues and family members may have given up hope that they will ever change. Because while the mission is easy to understand, the practice of changing is infinitely harder. Think about all the ways you've attempted to enact change in your own life. Losing weight, spending more time with family, listening better, exercising more often, drinking more water, staying focused on long-term goals. How many of these goals have become permanent? From my research with leaders, clients, and colleagues, the typical answer is none. There's a period of high motivation, and through sheer force of will, you'll remain conscientious on drinking your water, mustering the energy to go to the gym all week, or making an effort to listen intently during conversations. Then life takes over. You get busy, unexpected events happen, and you justify all the reasons you can't remain focused on your goals this week. Months later, your gym attendance is inconsistent at best, and no one thinks you've improved your listening. Worse yet than having failed at making these changes for your own life, how often have you tried to change the behavior of a parent, child, friend, partner, spouse, colleague, or employee? How did that go for you? The sentence beginning, "if only you just," does not normally lead to a productive conversation around positive changes and strategies to help the person you care about do things differently. In fact, more often than not, it results in the person becoming instantly defensive, angry, and resentful. And yet, with my coaching tools and skills and mindsets at the ready, miracles do happen. My clients shift long-standing patterns of self-sabotage. They adopt and maintain positive new behaviors that help them achieve their ambitions and aspirations. Words cannot describe how meaningful, how satisfying, and how joyful this work is. You just have to experience it for yourself. What I can put in words, however, is how absolutely possible it is. Yes, you can change other people. I do it all the time. So do Peter and Howie. And the book you're listening to right now will give you everything you need to master the process. Because it is a process. It's methodical, not magical or manipulative. It doesn't take any particular personality trait other than a sincere desire to help and the humility and discipline to learn something new and practice it diligently. In fact, the principles in this book underpin what I and other top coaches do to help our successful clients get even better. What Peter and Howie have done makes what we do accessible to you, to use at work, at home, and anywhere you want to help those you care about achieve their potential. They've taken what most people consider to be a frustrating, ambiguous process and formulated the four key steps to change for both yourself and others. Working with Peter for many years, it's been our business to change other people's behaviors in ways that get noticed by the people around them. I have been ranked as the number one executive coach in the world for many years, and Peter is my successor to that title. His expert knowledge is evident from the way he's laid out the methodology for leading people to change without throwing up those usual blocks of frustration and resentment. These steps guide you to be the kind of leader who encourages and builds their team to get the best results from them, empowering these individuals to grow and improve. Listen on and learn how to become a better leader, partner, parent, and friend today. You can start having the same impact on your world as the most sought-after coaches have in theirs. Life is good. Marshall Goldsmith, New York Times number one best-selling author of Triggers, Mojo, and What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Part 1. A new way to help people, because the old ways don't work. Chapter 1. Why It's Important to Change Other People. Brian's $170 million turnaround. When my client Brian Gaffney stepped into the role of CEO of Allianz Global Distributors, a financial services company with over $90 billion in assets, the company was losing $30 million a year. Not only was Allianz struggling, but the entire industry was in turmoil. Many other asset management companies were closing their doors, and morale was low. "My team is made up of incredibly talented people," Brian told me a short while after assuming the role. "But most of them have issues that are getting in the way of their effectiveness. One is rubbing people the wrong way by clumsy communications. Another isn't being clear with direct reports and isn't managing people effectively. A third needs to be more proactive. He isn't having hard conversations that need to happen. A fourth is brilliant, but sloppy. And several people are commenting on the risk to his credibility." So we went to work. And under Brian's leadership, a declining company made a complete turnaround. In the period that we worked together, he turned that $30 million loss into an annual profit of $140 million. Here's what's really important about this story. Brian's turnaround at Allianz happened with the same leadership team that had been losing $30 million a year. In other words, in a few short years, under Brian's leadership, the same people who were struggling with all those issues, the people who were leading the company to a damaging, unsustainable loss, changed. And it was Brian who helped them change by doing and saying specific things, things that moved strong-willed individuals in positive, productive ways, things that had a business-saving impact on revenue and profitability. What Brian did was not magic. Neither was it the product of Brian's charisma or powers of persuasion. It was straightforward, methodical, and replicable. And you can do it too in your world. What you need is a process. Can you really change other people? You can't change other people. You can only change yourself. It's a truism. Only it's not true. I know this with 100% certainty, because it's my job to change other people. As an executive coach for CEOs and senior leaders in organizations of all sizes, my success depends on it. Helping others change and improve when it's hard, and when they may not want to at first, can look and feel like magic. But it's not. It's a skill, a set of repeatable steps that I've studied, developed, and honed over 30 years of practice. And it's teachable, because I've taught it to people who have become some of the best coaches in the world. By the time you finish this book, you'll have that skill too, which is important because we all need the skill. No matter your role at work and in life, your success is dependent, at least in part, on the success of those around you. In many situations, it would be great for you if people change for the better. Just about all the time, though, it would be better for them too. An employee who's more capable than they realize, who could be taking on bigger projects. A bright colleague who, if only they spoke up and shared their perspective, could have a positive impact on the team and, consequently, their success in the company. A boss whose visionary strategy would finally get traction, if they focused more, resisting the distraction of bright, shiny objects. For many of us, helping people change is not just a nice-to-have skill, it's a requirement. If you're a leader or a manager in an organization, it's your job to change others, to transform squabbling coworkers into a capable team, to turn excuse makers into responsibility takers, to help high potential contributors overcome dysfunctional habits and achieve their potential. Changing others is perhaps the most important capability a leader can develop. And yet, it's a capability that most people lack. We avoid difficult conversations or handle them in ways that make things worse. We generate resistance rather than change. We point out how we want people to improve, but we lack the skills to get them there. We try to help and end up doing their work for them, making them dependent on us when we should be helping them grow their independent capability. When emotions run high, we can even damage those relationships. We feel stuck between a rock and a hard place, caring too much to keep our mouths shut, yet regretting the ineffective and hurtful things we say. If only there were a third option. There is. In this book, I will show you exactly why what you've been doing hasn't been working, and I will teach you what to do instead. I'll share my process, which I call the 4 steps. I have yet to find a more elegant, kind, and effective method for helping make the changes they want and need to make in their work and their lives. Rather than inviting resistance, the 4 steps generate ownership. Rather than fostering dependence, they create independent capability. Rather than strain the relationship between you and the person you're helping, the 4 steps grow and deepen your relationships. The ability to help other people change, even when they've been stuck for years, and even when they don't believe they can, is a superpower. Up until now, this superpower has been an esoteric skill set, honed and used by some of the world's most effective coaches. In this book, I'm going to deconstruct that superpower so you can practice and master it. Using the 4 steps, I helped one CEO of a high-tech company grow revenue from $350 million to over $1 billion as its stock price soared from $19 to $107. At another company, the senior team began working together, helping rather than criticizing each other, and their stock price tripled in a year. When leaders skillfully help each other and the people around them up their game, exceptional results follow. When I teach the 4 steps to CEOs and their leadership teams, the positive results cascade throughout the organization, generating independently capable teams that perform at much higher levels than before. People work together better and accept more accountability. People own their mistakes and failures, set and achieve higher goals, and resist the temptation of behaviors that get in the way. Over years of doing this work, I discovered something wonderful. The C-suite leaders I work with report that not only are they more effective at their jobs, and not only are their employees stepping up and becoming leaders in their own right, but their personal lives are easier and more satisfying as well. They stopped fighting with and micromanaging their kids. They had more empowering conversations with their spouses. And they found themselves helping others dig out of ruts that were sometimes decades in the making. My co-author, Howie, in addition to his work with business clients, also uses the 4 steps to help people change destructive, lifelong habits and regain their health. While doctors acknowledge that lifestyle can be as powerful as drugs and surgery, most don't offer this option to patients in the belief that they won't comply. Yet Howie's clients change their lifestyles all the time. One became a competitive triathlete, losing 60 pounds in the process. Another reversed his type 2 diabetes and reduced his blood pressure meds by 75% through dietary changes, daily exercise, and meditation practice. A third finally got off the binge diet binge cycle for the first time in her life, maintaining a healthy weight free from the impending doom of relapse. Let's banish the pain that comes from trying to change others in frustrated, angry ways, complaining, attacking, and manipulating them to get them to act differently. Those tactics cause tremendous damage. They don't feel good to anyone involved, and they don't work. The 4 steps do work, and they heal relationships as people become allies instead of enemies, choosing skillful support over clumsy, destructive criticism. Once you begin using the four steps, your world will feel lighter. You'll be happier. The people around you will be happier. You'll all get more done. I wrote this book because that's the world I want to live in. A world where we build ownership, capability, and courage all around us. Where, rather than lashing out as annoyed critics, we reach out as allies. A world where we help raise people up to be the best they can be. And where they make us better people in return. I'm grateful that you're taking the time to listen to this book. Thank you. A tour of the book. Before you start using the four steps, it's important to understand why they work, which I'll cover in part one. Part one, a new way to help people because the old ways don't work. First, in chapter two, I'll debunk the myth that people resist change and explain why so many of our efforts to change others fail. Then, in chapters 3 through 6, I'll introduce you to the four powers that a person needs in order to change: ownership, independent capability, emotional courage, and future-proofing. If someone doesn't change, they're missing at least one of these powers. And when you use the four steps to help someone change, what you're really doing is igniting these powers in them so they change themselves. In the rest of the book, I'll teach you to do just that. We'll follow one scenario all the way, from the initial problem to a detailed plan of action. You'll listen in on the conversation at the beginning of each step. Then we'll debrief that step in the following chapters, exploring underlying principles, do's and don'ts, and exceptions. Here's a brief description of each step. Step 1, shift from critic to ally, chapters 7 through 13. This is the magic move. It gets you to the place where your conversation partner agrees to receive your help. You'll learn how to initiate conversations that help others change. Even better, you'll learn to recognize and capitalize on silver platter opportunities, times when people come to you, already open to you helping them change, everyday opportunities that are easy to spot once you know what to look for. Start with this step, and you'll move quickly past any potential resistance, well-positioned as a trusted guide to help your partner change. Step 2, identify an energizing outcome, chapters 14 through 17. This step shifts your partner from focusing on the problem to focusing on the outcome they want. It's a deceptively simple reorientation that moves people from frustration to excitement. For many years, I didn't think this was such a big deal, but my clients tell me focusing on the desired outcome is not an obvious thing to do when they're mired in a difficult situation. It reliably gives them the right focus, exposing new and creative ways forward. Step 3, find the hidden opportunity, chapters 18 through 22. In this step, you return to the problem, but now you use it as an opportunity to achieve the outcome in a creative or unexpected way. Here's where you can help people change so that they not only get out of the mess they're in, but emerge at a whole new level of functioning. Step 4, create a level 10 plan, chapters 23 to 27. In this final step, you help your partner generate, refine, and commit to a specific action plan to achieve their energizing outcome. You're going for a level 10 plan, where they know exactly what they're going to do and are confident they can do it. This final step turns insight into action and intentions into impact. Those are the four steps: ally, outcome, opportunity, plan. If you're into mnemonics, think of alley-oop, which appropriately sounds like a basketball pass that sets your teammate up for a slam dunk. The companion website to this book, bregmanpartners.com/change, shares sample partner dialogues that demonstrate the four steps in different contexts. You'll find typical four-step conversations around hard issues that vary by domain, work and personal, power dynamic, supervisor, employee, spouses, parent, child, friends, and topic, work performance, health, relationship, personal goals. Before you have your first four-step conversation with a partner, read the sample dialogue that is most similar to the situation. It will help you find the right words to say and what kinds of responses you might expect from your partner. Although I share important principles about personal change, especially in the first few chapters, this is not a conceptual book. You Can Change Other People is a user's manual meant to be as practical as possible. Don't wait until you've mastered the four steps to start using them to help people change. Transparency is part of this process. You should feel free to share exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Tell the truth. Hey, I got this book and I think I can use the process to help you. I'm new at this, so it may not look smooth and polished. In fact, I might even pause and refer to the text from time to time. Are you open to that? Once you've listened to the book and practiced a few times, you will quickly grow your capability and confidence to use the four steps to help the people around you live fuller, richer, more powerful, and more authentic lives. First, though, let's dispel the myth that people resist change. Chapter 2. People don't resist change. They resist being changed. Yes. I want that third bowl of ice cream. Let me say up front, with a father's pride, that my 13-year-old son Daniel is one of the smartest, most talented people I know. He's quick, charming, and witty, and he's the poster child for resistance. Even a basic direction, "Go brush your teeth," elicits tremendous pushback. But when Daniel sets his mind to something, his drive, enthusiasm, and persistence are unstoppable. He will change and raise his game in all sorts of ways. Case in point, a gaming PC. He wanted it, but I wouldn't buy it for him. So he went to work, formulating a plan to make enough money to afford it on his own. He asked his grandfather for an inexpensive drone for his birthday. He spent hours mastering it, learning how to shoot aerial video footage, and eventually impressing his Aunt Catherine enough that she hired him to go with her to South Carolina for a week and shoot footage for her real estate company. He was nervous about making the trip by himself, but decided to do it. He packed his own bag, no nagging required. He made a stellar video and $650. The computer he wanted was still way out of his budget. Undeterred, he discovered a way. He would buy the parts and build it himself. He educated himself on cases, motherboards, graphics cards, fans, and the rest, and ordered them from various websites. He enlisted his cousin Atticus to help him build it. After 3 months of overcoming obstacles, he finally had his gaming PC. In order to get what he wanted, Daniel had to change. He learned new skills, started a business, found a client, overcame fears, asked for help, and solved challenging problems. All of this from the kid who wouldn't brush his teeth when I asked him to. Daniel wasn't resistant to change. He was resistant to being changed. People change all the time on their own. They make big changes like starting businesses, getting married, moving, or getting a new job. And they make smaller changes like eating healthier, waking up earlier, or listening better. But people change when they choose to change. If they feel like you're trying to make them change, forget it. The problem isn't a lack of skills, tactics, or strategy. Most of the time, people know exactly what to do. They're just not doing it. And it's that gap between what they know and what they do that's the challenge. Telling someone who's overeating sugar to stop eating sugar is profoundly unhelpful. When people struggle with a problem, they often feel shame at their own inadequacy. The very fact that they want or need your help means to them that they've already failed. They think some version of, "I should be able to handle this on my own. What's wrong with me?" Now, imagine that you understand their problem and have a great idea that can help them. If you share your solution right away and they haven't thought of it themselves, that will often bring their shame to the surface. And shame is inhibitory. That is, when people feel shame, they stop taking action. Unlike guilt, which says, "I did a bad thing," and can motivate people to change, shame says, "I am a bad person," and typically represses initiative and halts momentum. Here's why. Shame is one of the feelings human beings will do almost anything not to feel. And the easiest way to get rid of shame, at least temporarily, is denial. If you deny the source of the shame, you deny that you have a problem, or deny that it's your problem. Presto, no shame. But of course, denying the problem, or the severity of the problem, or the consequences of the problem, means denying the need to change, which we then call resistance to change. Unfortunately, most of what we try to do to help people change reinforces their shame. When we barge in with the answer or think we can do it better, or when we think they should know better, we reinforce their shame. That's why simply telling people what to do or what we did in a similar situation or what we would do if we were in that situation so often backfires. We give advice, they hear criticism. I know I do. When I reach for the pint of Ben & Jerry's to fill up my third bowl of ice cream, and anyone, my wife, my children, a concerned friend, asks, "Do you really want that third bowl of ice cream?" No matter how stuffed I am, I can assure you that I will answer with a loud yes, and then add some extra fudge on top in defiance. Here's what's crazy. I really do want to stop eating sugar. And I also know that they want to be helpful. They don't mean to criticize me. Technically, they're just asking me a question. I know they love and care for me, but I am also ashamed to admit at that moment that I'm out of control. It feels weak to say, "You're right, I can't control myself." So I don't. I double down on my mistake in order to say I'm in control. I know you don't mean to be a critic when you give advice. But if the people you're trying to help feel that you're coming at them with an air of, "I know better than you," or "the answer is simple, just do X," they'll dig in their heels and resist change. But that doesn't mean there isn't a way to help them change. We just have to let go of unsolicited advice and explanations. As I write this, Daniel is gaming on the new computer that he changed his life to build. People can overcome great odds to follow through on what they want. But we won't help them get there by criticizing what they're doing, telling them what to do, or trying to motivate them to do something different. Fortunately, there are ways we can help. We can develop a person's ownership, independent capability, emotional courage, and future-proofing, so they change themselves. In the next four chapters, we'll explore each of those powers, starting with ownership. Chapter 3. Power 1. Ownership. Whose spreadsheet is it anyway? Spencer, the CEO of a technology company, was worried. The company's customer growth rate was too low. So Spencer did some digging and realized that marketing wasn't producing enough leads. History showed that a certain number of leads would predictably convert into customers. That conversion rate was steady, but the leads had dropped off. The solution was straightforward: more leads, more customers. So Spencer started nudging, cajoling, and probing to get better data from marketing about leads. Weeks later, he still hadn't gotten a straight answer. In exasperation, he asked his chief marketing officer, Octavia, to create a weekly marketing report and have it in his inbox by 10 a.m. each Monday. When Spencer looked at the first report, his eyes glazed over. He was staring at a complex spreadsheet complete with pivot tables, a dozen different background colors, and so much data that the key numbers were obscured by hundreds of unimportant ones. In frustration, Spencer took 30 minutes and simplified the report to show just two columns, goal and performance against the goal. He then emailed it to Octavia, telling her that her report didn't distinguish signal from noise and that she should use his new one from now on. He figured she'd be happy because the new report took far less time to complete and offered a much clearer picture of how things stand. Is that how Octavia felt when she received his email? Sadly and predictably, no. Octavia felt unappreciated, misunderstood, and angry. First, she'd spent the entire weekend working on the spreadsheet, collating numbers from multiple sources, and getting more and more annoyed at the company's fragmented approach to customer relationship management, CRM. Second, Spencer totally misunderstood what Octavia wanted him to see. To her, the top line numbers were meaningless without context. What was the value in simply knowing that their lead flow last week missed the target by 45%? The important data were in the details. Registration and conversion rates of the marketing webinars, the number of participants who watched long enough to hear.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?